Well, welcome to this issue of Discovering Truth at the Movies. Hi, my name is David Lance. In this episode of the Chronicles of Belteshazzar, Daniel is thrown into the lion's den. In the morning, when the lion's den door is opened, Daniel emerges unharmed to the surprise and dismay of Haman and his supporters. Naaman and Daniel meet with King Nebuchadnezzar to warn him of Haman's secret plot against him. Using the story of Back to the Future Part 2, I'll talk about how removing the Bible from American society has cast us into our own modern version of the lion's den. And I'll use that to ask this question for reflection. In what ways can we help our fellow citizens see the need to restore the habit of reading the Bible? And so I just want you to know that my novel, The Chronicles of Belteshazzar, is available for purchase. You can go to Amazon.com, either in paperback or Kindle form, or you can go to my website at wisejargon.com/chronicles. It's a novel about a boy who learned how Daniel lived by faith instead of cowering in fear. And so without further ado, let's go into chapter 21 of the Chronicles of Belteshazzar and how Daniel is thrown to the lions. Naaman, his head throbbing, walked with Daniel and his captors as they neared Nebuchadnezzar's palace. He had described his attackers to those in his command who had come to him at once upon hearing the attack. At the very end, someone had called out to the man who had attacked him, calling him Troas. Was he their leader? Naaman's first thought had been that the attackers were in Haman's pay, but then why had the priest's guards come to his rescue? No, while the Greek attackers seemed to be in league with Haman, it could not be. The only other alternative was that they were here for their own reasons, which included wishing to see Daniel taken prisoner. Naaman would have to get to the bottom of this mystery, but his more immediate concern was Daniel's imminent trial and sentencing. Naaman could not be seen attempting to aid Daniel in his defiance of the king's decree, but how could he save his friend? If only Daniel had had the common sense to suspend his religious practices, at least for a time. Arriving at the court of Nebuchadnezzar, they waited for the king to call them. After nearly an hour, Naaman followed Daniel and his captors into the great hall to find Haman already there. The chief priest began the proceedings and read off the charges against Daniel. Daniel, a Hebrew captive who has come to be known as Belteshazzar, appointed the chief scribe, has been granted the privilege of serving in your court. Yet, today this same person was found in flagrant disregard of one of our commandments. Did you not, King Nebuchadnezzar, establish a decree that for the next 30 days, no man could make any supplication to or request of the gods, save to your divine self? Haman continued to press his case. The Hebrew Daniel was caught this morning, this very day after your decree was issued, making such supplication. Though he has been appointed to high office, he must face the full penalty of our laws. He must be cast into the lion's den. To allow him to escape the king's law would invite anyone to believe themselves above the laws of our people. Naaman watched the eyebrows of Nebuchadnezzar furrow as he listened to Haman's request. Could the king be experiencing second thoughts now that his destiny had been forced upon him? Torn between the urge to speak out in Daniel's defense and his fears of choosing the losing side in this confrontation, Timna's warning came back to strike him like a dagger. He could not rise to Daniel's defense without appearing to be a traitor and thereby jeopardizing his own position. While Naaman stood frozen by indecision, Nebuchadnezzar finally answered Haman. It is as you say. I have made the decree, and no man may break it under penalty of death. At sunset, Daniel is to be cast into the lion's den, where he shall remain until sunrise tomorrow. Belteshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar said to Daniel, using his Babylonian name one last time, you have been a trusted servant. If you are blameless in this case, may your God, whom you worship continually, save you. Nebuchadnezzar rose from his throne and retreated down the hallway leading to his private chambers. Naaman shook his head, suddenly realizing how foolish he had been. Nebuchadnezzar had spoken to Daniel in a mocking tone. He had not meant any of these words. Timna had been right. Naaman should never have become so as closely associated with Daniel as he had. Perhaps the gods have been smiling on him after all for stopping him from confronting Daniel this morning. Had he been found with Daniel, Haman would no doubt have found a way to implicate him in Daniel's crime. Naaman's only desire was to leave the palace. In the morning, he would go to see whether Daniel lived or died. For now, he simply wanted to escape his own sense of shame and guilt. Daniel awoke, slowly shaking off the effects of a deep sleep. His subconscious mind still held the visions he had seen this night, the sight of the temple of Beelzebub and the priests bringing grain and animal sacrifices into the inner sanctuary. Each morning, the sacrifices had vanished when the chambermaids came to clean the holy places. In his dream, Daniel had seen people ascending and descending a staircase hidden behind the idol of Beelzebub. From his vision, Daniel knew how Haman was using the temple to use the sacrifices to line his own pockets and reward his supporters with food and gold. Haman had intended the temple as an insult to his god, calling it a name that meant Lord of the Flies. But Haman would discover that it would spell his doom. He remembered little of his entrance into the cave, only that he had been given a small torch, which soon went out. Now, as he became fully awake, Daniel could hear the deep, steady breathing of the bodies around him, smelled their odors. Then Daniel remembered where he was, not merely in a cave, but a lion's den. Above him, the sound of voices filtered down. Moments later, a great stone was rolled away, and Daniel could look out of the cave to an overcast sky. As he stood up, the opening only 2 feet above his head, a voice called out, "Daniel! Are you still alive? Was your God able to save you?" Laughter greeted this disembodied voice of Nebuchadnezzar. Adrenaline pumping, Daniel crouched down and then leapt for the opening. His hands grasping the edges of the aperture, others laid hold of him and pulled him up to safety. No sooner had he picked himself up and stood among the people surrounding the layer's opening than the lions below let out a collective hideous roar. Daniel grimaced from the deafening noise and then looked around him at the stunned crowd. Not only were Haman and the Babylonian governors present, all the leaders of the exile groups were there, even Timnah. Daniel caught sight of Ezekiel. Even he had the same awestruck look like the rest. Then it dawned on him. Haman had hoped to use this moment to demonstrate his power, but now he tried to make himself as small as possible. "Indeed, O king, my God was able to rescue me. He sent his angel to shut the mouths of the lion so that I would come to no harm, for I am innocent before my God and my king." Daniel saw no reason not to answer Nebuchadnezzar's question by stating the obvious. The king was visibly shaken. When he had spoken earlier, asking Daniel if his God had been able to save him, he had done so in jest. Now, all he could do was attempt to recover his poise in front of all those who were there. "Of your innocence, there can be no doubt. You are free, Belteshazzar, innocent of all you've been accused." Daniel bowed to Nebuchadnezzar, and then in a quiet voice so that it would not carry to those around him, he said, "While I was in the lion's den, my God caused me to fall into a deep sleep. And while I slept, he showed me a vision which I ask the opportunity to impart to you and to Naaman alone. It involves a traitor to the king. Will my lord grant me this audience?" Nebuchadnezzar's eyes narrowed at the word traitor. "Yes," he replied. "After you have fed and refreshed yourself, we shall have that audience." In a small sitting room, a servant poured 3 cups of wine and left. As Nebuchadnezzar and Naaman entered the room, Daniel rose to greet them. Each took a cup of wine and sat down. "To your health. May your reign be long and glorious," said Daniel, raising his cup in a toast to the king. Nebuchadnezzar smiled warily, and the three took a sip from their cups. Having thus broken the ice, Daniel began to describe the vision. "King Nebuchadnezzar, I know that in these last few months you and I have grown distant, but I am not your enemy. We have known for some time who that enemy is, but lacked a way to prove it to you. Last night in the lion's den, my God revealed to me the means by which to give you that proof." "And just who is my enemy?" Nebuchadnezzar asked, leaning back, eyes boring holes in Daniel. Haman, my lord, he answered after first looking over at Naaman. Is this true that you have suspected Haman of treason for some time? Nebuchadnezzar said, turning to Naaman. Yes, my lord, the captain of the guard replied. What is your evidence? Nebuchadnezzar asked. As you may know, my king, each evening the sacrifices are brought to the new temple of Beelzebub. And each morning, instead of being available for disbursement to the priests and the king's servants, the food sacrificed had vanished. Daniel began. But is that not because your God is a hungry one? Interrupted Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel shook his head. No. Despite what you may have been told, that is not my God. It is an abomination to my people. No, what Haman has done is to build a secret passageway behind the idol. At night, after the evening sacrifices, his people come in and take the food offerings. And if you have noticed, they have also begun to ask the people for offerings of gold and silver. Haman began to demand such offerings at the same time you signed the decree requiring all prayers be made to you at the temple of Beelzebub, Naaman interjected. Why was I not told of this? Nebuchadnezzar demanded, leaning forward in his chair. Because, my lord, Haman seeks your throne. He has long wished to stir up the passions of the exile groups against one another, as well as those of your own people, to create civil unrest, even riots. By causing panic in the streets, Haman would then orchestrate a coup, focusing the anger of the people on you. The people would then entrust their loyalty to him as the only person who could save the kingdom from anarchy. I have a witness who can testify that it was Haman who was behind the attempt to assassinate Belteshazzar last year, Naaman interjected. I have not sought to bring his evidence forward until now because I needed additional proof that would corroborate my witness's story. And who is this witness? Nebuchadnezzar asked. Timnah, queen of the Ashkelonites. Nebuchadnezzar paused and thought about what Naaman had just said, and then slowly nodded his head. Yes, I can see why you would want additional evidence, since it was her people that attempted to kill Belteshazzar. Turning to Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar said, very well then, what is your plan? And for the next several minutes, Daniel explained how they could reveal what Haman was doing. The plans for their trap laid, Daniel and Naaman left to speak with Timnah. Tomorrow, she would be called upon to serve as a witness against Haman. And so now I'd like to take a moment for a personal reflection. As we said back in chapter 19, titled Thermostats and Governors, the biblical story of Daniel takes place late in the prophet's life during the reign of King Darius. That is the story of Daniel being thrown into the lion's den. While I want to fully state that adhering to the biblical account is important to me, there are two things that I want to bring out in this chapter, which I feel are best done by keeping the account of the lion's den during Daniel's early years with King Nebuchadnezzar. First, as is recorded in Daniel 6:24, all those who had falsely accused Daniel, including their wives and their children, were to be thrown into the lion's den themselves. This seems to be much more in keeping with the revolt that happened in the 590s BC that we've already discussed in previous conversations. Second, if you think about it, there are also parallels we can draw to our own day here and now when the Supreme Court outlawed prayer in school. I want to share a personal story connected to this. Back in 1993, when I was the state director of the Indiana Christian Coalition, a debate arose as to whether or not student valedictorians would be allowed to talk about their faith and mention Jesus Christ during their high school graduation speeches. The Indiana Civil Liberties Union, or ICLU, sent a letter to all high schools in the state of Indiana threatening to sue their schools if anyone prayed or talked about God during any of the commencement speeches. One school student body openly defied this threat by prearranging for the valedictorian to sneeze, at which point the entire student body responded by saying, God bless you. Jay Sekulow with the American Center for Law and Justice responded to the ICLU's letter by sending his own letter to all high schools in Indiana saying they would take legal action if the First Amendment rights of the students in Indiana were violated. At one point, while these threats of suits and countersuits were being made, a group in Bloomington, Indiana, that's the home of Indiana University, hosted a forum to discuss the issues related to prayer in school and high school commencement speeches. Among the six invited speakers, three on either side of the issue, was myself and a representative from the ICLU who had actually been the person who had written the letter to the schools threatening the lawsuit. As I took the stage to deliver my prepared remarks, and please note that I discovered that once I arrived, the whole presentation had been cast as a debate just simply between myself and the member of the Indiana Civil Liberties Union. But as I prepared to give my own remarks, I used Daniel 6:24 to draw an analogy to a liberal group founded by liberal TV producer Norman Lear called People for the American Way. That organization, People for the American Way, is still in existence today. Using the group name to play off of, I talked about my ICLU counterpart as the spokesperson for the, quote, People for the Babylonian Way. How back in Daniel's day, the People for the Babylonian Way conspired to silence any discussion of God. I then took the story of what happened to Daniel's enemies to draw this analogy, that we in America would suffer a similar fate by removing God from society, as our families and our children would find themselves thrown into the equivalent of a modern cultural lion's den of drug addiction, crime, violence, and even the criminalization of different political opinions in order to shut people up. In the movie Back to the Future Part 2, I find a parallel universe where justice, hope, and peace have been replaced by envy, crime, and violence. In the movie, Doc Brown and Marty McFly and Marty's girlfriend Jennifer take the time-traveling DeLorean into the year 2015 to straighten out the future of the McFly family. Marty's high school nemesis, Biff Tannen, from 2015, steals the time machine and gives his younger self a book containing 50 years of sports statistics. The young Biff of 1955 uses the book to amass an enormous gambling fortune and builds a casino gambling empire. In an alternative timeline, Biff from 1955 kills Marty's father and marries his mother, indulging all of his narcissistic desires as he transforms idyllic Hill Valley into a living hell. To restore the original present of 1985, Doc and Marty must return to the events of their previous adventures in 1955 and retrieve the book. They have this conversation. There's a little matter we have to talk about. We have to go back to 1955 and prevent our culture from falling apart. And that leads to today's question for reflection. In what ways can we help our fellow citizens see the need to restore the habit of reading the Bible and learning about God? Well, I hope that this episode has been of help to you in looking at the Chronicles of Belteshazzar. And so I want you to know that you can order the book, The Chronicles of Belteshazzar, by going to Amazon.com, or you can also go to my website at wisejargon.com/chronicles. You can also go to my website, wisejargon.com/atthemovies, to learn more about my newsletter, Conversation with the Culture, and the other things that I'm doing. Well, until next time, thanks so much, and God bless.